Good morning. You guys doing well? I have missed you. If you did not come to the Christmas Eve service, do you know it's been 21 days since we've gathered together? That is way too long, right? Okay, there's a few of you that agree with me. Hey, it was kind of lonely last week. Jeff and I were here, and hopefully you guys were able to watch online. So speaking of that, if you're online this morning, just give us a thumbs up. Good morning, hello. Let us know you're worshiping with us in that avenue. But I'm just glad to be with you guys during this time, and we pledge that we will never cancel church again. Like we have any control over that. So, but yeah, the weather was kind of nasty, and but it was good. Good to be with you guys today. So we're stepping back into our series called David, Shepherd, Prophet, King. So have you guys ever like been in life and just had these thoughts that, man, this is just too hard. Life is just hard. God, it doesn't make sense of what I'm going through in my life right now. God, this is taking too long. God, I've been in this season. I've been in this chapter. God, when will this end? It is going way too long. And many times we have this tendency, if it's too hard or it's too long or it doesn't make sense, we're like, well, I'm just going to do it my way. I'm just going to make my own path. I'm going to do my own thing. And we're going to find this in David today. And so we're jumping back into the story of David. We've taken several weeks off. I think it was November the last time we studied 1 and 2 Samuel. And we've been looking for a hero in the story. And again, we're going to discover in the story, David is no hero. In fact, we're going to look at the story and be like, what? David, you did what now? And so we're stepping back into it, and so we're going to find the hero of the story that even though there's ups and downs and victories and mistakes in David's life, he is going to point us to the real hero, and the hero of your story and my story, and that is God. So when we left off David, he was running for his life from King Saul. We saw in the story that David had a chance to take Saul's life, but he didn't. Instead, he just took a little corner of Saul's robe. And we saw that even in that act of disobedience, it grieved David's heart. And for you and for me, we're like, really, David? Like, you could have taken his life, but you didn't. All you did was just take a corner of his robe. What's the big deal? But David, he grieved in his disobedience. He grieved in his sin. And so we use this story as a backdrop of what it means to live a holy life before God. That even the smallest sins or the littlest of disobedience affects our relationship with God. That we can't mask or we can't hide or try to cover up our sins, but we have to allow the Holy Spirit to do a work in us to begin to transform us and to deal with our sin. And after hearing this story today, I think you're going to be like, David, what in the world were you thinking? He goes from the story we looked at last week, that he's convicted over even the smallest sin, the smallest compromise, and now he's to a place where he's doing things that are unimaginable to us, where David is deciding, I'm going to do it my way because God, this is not working out for me. And this story may taint our view a little bit of David, and that we see in Acts chapter 13 where it says that David was a man after God's own heart, and we're looking at this story today and we're like, David's heart is not after God. David's heart is after his own thing. But we'll see that no matter what you and I have gone through, no matter the sin we've committed, no matter the chapters that we have written, that God can restore and redeem. And I'm so thankful that the Bible is not a story written about perfect people. It's a story written about some messed up stuff and messed up lives. But it's a story of a perfect God who can redeem you and me. So if you guys have your Bibles, turn to 1 Samuel chapter 27. 1 Samuel chapter 27. If you're new to FSN, I'm Pastor Virgil. I'm one of the pastors here. And I'm just excited to gather with you guys. Again, it's been 21 days. I'm ramped up and amped up. You guys ready for this? Some of you are like, what in the world did I come to? Anyway, so if you're new to FSN, you didn't bring your Bible, there'll be a Bible in front of you and find 1 Samuel chapter 27 on page 203. We want you to follow along. So I have read this chapter multiple times. So throughout this series, usually is my custom is I'll read the passage I'm studying out, but I'll probably read like several chapters after this. So I've read this chapter probably 4, 5, 6 times, but it really, until I begin to study, did I really begin to see what this is all about. And it starts with 5 very dangerous words. So 1 Samuel chapter 27, verse 1, it says this, "But David thought to himself," I want to stop right there. I want you to underline that phrase. That is so dangerous. "But David thought to himself." David did not seek wise counsel, as we studied before. David was not seeking the Lord at this time. It says that he was thinking to himself, "What is the best plan I have for me right now? What is the best of the possibilities that I can come up with?" So it says that David thought to himself, "One of these days I will be destroyed by the hand of Saul. And the best thing I can do is to escape to the land of the Philistines. Then Saul will give up searching for me everywhere in Israel, and I will slip through his hands." So for 9 chapters, we have seen Saul hunting for David. 9 chapters, David is running for his life. 9 chapters of hiding with his friends, hiding with his family, hiding in caves. 9 chapters, we have seen God miraculously help David slip away from Saul. Twice, David had a chance to take Saul's life, but he didn't. 9 chapters of being separated from his family, his wife, from the comforts of home. And these 9 chapters are 4 years of being on the run. It's beginning to take a toll on David, spiritually, mentally, emotionally, and physically. He's put his faith in God for 4 years, and nothing has changed. He's still hiding. He's still on the run. How long do we expect David to hold on to hope? And we look at it, we've been studying these last few weeks, and we've seen over and over and over again God show himself to David. But for David, how long is it going to go on? For you and me, we've been studying for just a few weeks, these 9 chapters. But we have to step into David's shoes, and this has been 4 years. How long would you wait? How long would you be faithful and obedient? How long would you wait for God to move? And David thinks to himself that eventually King Saul is going to kill me. And so David's self-talk to himself is different than what God is saying. God has anointed a king. People have confirmed that. God, you, David, you will not die. You will be king. But his self-thought is eventually Saul is going to catch me and I will die. But for David, he can only see what's right in front of him, his current reality, and it's beginning to fade out his faith with God. And so there's a problem with David. I think there's a problem with us also today, is that when we choose to follow our own plan, we're going to give up on God's plan. When you and I think what is best, when we go with our gut, when we choose to follow our own plan, we're giving up on God's plan. Every single day, you and I, when we get up, we have a choice to make. Am I going to go my way or am I going to go God's way? Am I going to make my plan or am I going to go with God's plan? Every single day, you and I have a choice to make every day when we wake up. And if we're honest with ourselves, following God is not easy. In fact, there's times it is hard. There's times when we're following God, it does not make sense. Sometimes, when we're following God, things take longer than we think they should take. And that's where David is in his current reality. 9 chapters, and it just keeps getting harder. And it'd be so much easier if I would just do it my own way. And so for many of us, we feel like David. We look at our obedience with God, we look at our prayers, our service to him, and we think, God, I'm right where I started. Nothing has changed in my life. Wouldn't you think eventually my life would pay off if I've walked with you for a number of years?
And David is right there. He's choosing his own path. He turns away from God's plan, and he's headed towards the enemy's territory. So I want you to look back right in the middle of verse 1, and it says this, that David thinks, the best thing I can do is to escape to the land of the Philistines. He thinks his only option out of this situation is to escape to the enemy territory. You see, God's will for us is far greater than just escaping our current reality. God's will for you and for me is so much greater than us to escape this current reality, what we're facing right now. Where you find yourself, no matter how big it is to you, no matter how much how it is small in comparison to the plan that God has for you, no matter how big what you face right now is small in comparison for the plan that God has for you. And sometimes we have this if-only mentality. If only God would do this, or if only God would take this away, if only God would remove me from this situation, and that's where David is that if only I could escape this situation, then things are going to be okay. But to escape his current situation, his current reality, he thinks that he has to go to Gath, to the Philistines, to the enemy territory. David's already been there once. If you look back a few chapters ago, he's been there. He has killed the Philistine hero. We saw the beginning of David's story. He kills the Goliath, the giant. He's done battle against them, and all he can think is, the way that I can escape this is to go to them. The last place David should go is there. And how many times do you and I go back to the very thing that we shouldn't go to? How many times when we get in a difficult situation, we go back to the very thing that God has delivered us from? We think, this is the only way I can escape. And David trusted his own heart, and he trusted himself. In fact, in Jeremiah 17, it says this, "The heart is deceitful above all things and beyond cure. Who can understand it?" I've said this before, and I'll say this again. Don't follow your heart. You know, if you're having a conversation with somebody and you're trying to decide what to do, what's the next chapter in your life, and they say, oh, just follow your heart. No. That's horrible advice. Don't follow your heart. Your heart wants to do what your flesh wants to do. Your sinful nature wants to do. Let me tell you, don't trust your heart. Don't trust your own understanding. But what is it that we can trust? Proverbs 3, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways submit to him, and he will make your paths straight. Tell your heart, tell yourself, lean on Jesus. He is the one that can be trusted. You can't trust your heart. The path isn't always going to be easy. But it says the path will be straight. It will be known. God will make it known for you. God will reveal it to you. When we submit to him, we surrender to him, we don't lean on ourselves. When we lean on him, the path will be known. Sometimes it's just one step. He'll make that clear. Sometimes he'll make several steps. Sometimes he can make the path known to you. But it says that when we lean on him, not our own understanding, he'll make our path straight. He knows the bigger picture that we don't see. He knows the things that we don't understand. He knows the end of the path and where it is leading. In fact, in Proverbs 14, there's a way that appears right, but in the end, it leads to death. You see, you and I, we get in trouble when we start thinking to ourselves, talking to ourselves, that I know what's best. I know how to get out of the situation. This is the direction that I will go. And our self-talk starts trusting our heart or trusting our gut. And we start trusting our own plan. And Scripture tells us, don't go that way. Don't trust yourself. Don't lean on yourself. The only thing that you and I can fully trust in is God and his wisdom and his purpose and in his timing. And don't trust your own plan that leads to Gath. plans that leads to the enemy's territory, plans that leads us to places and seasons and chapters we never thought we would ever go. And so here's the problem. When you and I get into difficult situations like David, sometimes all we can see is our current reality, our difficult situation. It's not like we have blinders on the side where we're just focused straight ahead. It's as if our difficult situation is right here in front of us. And we can't see the path and we can't see the people. In fact, if I put this book, I can't see your beautiful faces. Okay, that's a joke. Okay. Wow, okay. You have beautiful faces. I can't see you right now. Okay, that one fell flat. Sorry, baby. No. But sometimes all we can see is our current reality, the situations that we have. We can't see the path. We can't see the people in front of us. Maybe it be in our marriage or our relationship, maybe with our children, maybe it's at work. All we can see is our current reality. We're so focused on it. And all we want to do is get away from this. And when God doesn't begin to remove those chapters or those sayings or those seasons that we have, then we're like, well, I will just move away from it. I will walk my own path. I think I know what's best. We think to ourselves. Those are dangerous words. And so in order for you and for me to be removed from our current reality that we think that God's not dealing with, we're like, well, I'm going to move over. And we walk our own path. We do our own thing. And God looks at this as just a season that we walk through, whether it be good or bad, a season that we don't lean on ourselves or on understanding, but we lean on the purpose and the plans that God has for us in the midst of this. But far too often, we want to escape. We want to run away. And when we do that, we forfeit the plans and the purposes that God has for you and for me. And now, hear me in this. I don't want to minimize what you're going through right now. Man, there's some difficult situations. As I listen to your stories, as I see and I hear what you're going through, I'm not minimizing that. I just want to say, I want to give you a true perspective of the seasons that you're in. To not quit. To resist the escape before you see God do some incredible things. And no matter what you're going through, no matter whether big or small, will never change the will of God. I want to say that again. No matter what you're going through right now, big or small, will never change the will of God. This current chapter doesn't change the story that God is writing. What you're going through right now, what you can't see beyond your current situation, doesn't change the story that God is writing right now. His life, what he has for you, his will for you, is bigger than your current situation. And so for the rest of this chapter, we're going to see that David can only see his current reality. And he thinks the only thing I can do is escape. And we'll see the lengths that David takes to escape and the compromises he makes and the lies he weaves to cover his actions. So verse 2. That was just verse 1, guys. We're going to be here for a long time. I'm joking. We're going to be moving along. So verse 2. So David and his 600 men with him left and went to Achish, the son of Maach, king of Gath. David and his men settled in Gath with Achish. Each man had his family with him. Catch that. Each man, the 600 of them, had his own family with him. And David with his two wives, whatever her name is, and Jezreel, and Abigail of Carmel, and the widow of Nabal. It wasn't just David and his men. It was David and his men and his families. You see, families can't live in caves for very long. And so they were siding with David. What is Saul going to do with my family if I've sided with David? They were afraid of what Saul was capable of. And so how nice would it be
in the morning to wake up next to my wife and not next to 600 stinky guys? How nice would it be to hear the laughter of my children playing again? How nice would it be to be in a soft bed versus this cold cave floor? And his plan, it makes sense. We've been running for 4 years. We got to do something. We got to go with our families where Saul cannot be. And then verse 4, when Saul was told that David had fled to Gath, guess what happened? He no longer searched for him. Problem solved, right? David, your plan has worked. You wanted to get away from Saul. Finally, you're away from Saul. And they moved to Gath. Saul wasn't chasing him anymore. Problem solved. David, you're so smart. The plan has worked. But the problem is, in order to do it, he had to move into enemy territory. You have to move outside of God's obedience, the will of God. And now you have to justify your actions, and you have to compromise. Verse 5, then David said to Achish, if I found favor, grasp onto that. If I have found favor in your eyes, let a place be assigned to me in one of the country towns, that I may live there. Why should your servant live in the royal city with you? So on that day, Achish gave him Ziklag, and it had belonged to the kings of Judah ever since. David lived in Philistine territory a year and 14 months. So for 16 months, he lives there. And he wants to know, King, have I found favor in your eyes? With me living here, have I found favor in your eyes? He has found favor in the eyes of the enemy? And why in the world would David compromise to find favor in the eyes of the enemy? And it's so easy to understand because you and I do it all the time. We want to be accepted. We want to fit in. We want to follow the customs and behaviors of everyone else around us. We just simply want to blend in our relationships. We want to blend in with our marriages, our finances, our sexuality is bent on what the world wants, what culture wants. But God calls us as followers of Christ to be set apart, to be used by Him, to be salt and light in this world, to no longer follow the customs and behaviors, to live different, different in our actions, different in our choices, different in our attitudes. And that's what God means when He calls us this big theological word of being sanctified, which just simply means to be set apart. Have a different purpose and a different plan than what culture has to offer. That when we surrender our life to Him, that we live a different way. Our paths, we walk differently. We do marriage differently. We handle our finances differently. We handle our sexuality differently than what culture says. And so teenager and young adult, man, I want to talk to you. It is so easy to feel the pull of the world. It wasn't too long ago that I was a teenager. I know it shocked some of you, but it wasn't too long ago. I remember. But the thing is, you can still be in this world, but live set apart from what the world has to offer. It doesn't mean that you hide away or you escape, but you choose to live differently. That there's things and there's parties that you don't go to. And that is cool. And that shows my age. That's cool. And so Nick said lit is the new word. That is lit. That is all right. That you live a life that's so different, whether it be a teenager, young adult, or up into our seniors, that we live a life that's so different. We live in the world, but we're not part of the world. That we live different, that they don't even waste their breath and say, hey, why don't you come to this party? Why don't you do this thing? Because they know automatically the answer is no. Because you live a life that's set apart, that's different. And the thing is that you and I are going to follow something. We're either going to follow the customs and behaviors of this current culture, or we're going to follow God and His calling on our life.
And here's the beautiful thing is that that's what free will is. Is that we're not puppets to God. He doesn't make us do things. But he gives us the choice. Do you follow yourself? Do you follow the customs and behaviors of this world? Or do you follow me? And every single day, as I said before, every day I have to get up and say, okay, am I going to follow Virgil? Or am I going to follow what God wants? Am I going to follow the customs and behaviors of this world that I see and the media I see and around me? Or am I going to follow what God has called me to? That is free will. You get to choose. But the question is who are you allowing to lead you? And so watch what David does. It's the saddest part of this whole story. And so watch what David does to find favor with the enemy. Verse 8. Now David and his men went up to raid the Geshurites and the Girzites and the Amalekites. From ancient times, the people had lived in the land extending to Shur and Egypt. Whenever David attacked an area, watch this, it breaks my heart. He did not leave a man or woman alive, but took the sheep, the cattle, the donkeys, the camels, and the clothes. And when he returned to Achish was asked, hey, David, where have you been raiding today? And David would say, he didn't say the Gishites or Gerzites or the Amalekites. He said, I was against the Negev of Judah or against the Negev of Jeremel or against the Negev of the Kenites. Watch this. He did not leave a man or woman alive to be brought to Gath, for he thought. Again, he was thinking in his mind, his self-talk, his thought. They might inform on us and say, this is what David did. So in order to not be found out, he made up this lie and he just slaughtered everyone that would know. And such was his practice as long as he lived in the Philistine territory. Did you catch that? 16 months. He attacked the Gishites, the Gezerites, and the Amalekites, leaving no one alive because he thought, if I do, it will be found out what I am doing. And so instead of telling the king what he was doing, he would say, oh, I'm just in the Negev, the dry region of Judah, his own people. The Jeremites and the Kenites, they were clans who lived among the Israelites. And why did he do that? To find favor in the eyes of the enemy king. Man, you see the slippery slope that David's on? It starts with he thought to himself, I've got to get out of my current situation. God's not doing it, so I've got to do it. The only way I can get out, I can think of, is I've got to go to the enemy territory. And guess what? It works. But what is David's compromise? To go to that place where he shouldn't. Says that he senselessly slaughter people and villages and lie to find the favor in the eyes of the king, a people he should not have been around. Then Achish trusted David, verse 12, and said to him, he has become so obnoxious to his people, the Israelites, that he will be my servant for life. Achish was hearing all that David was doing. He's like, they're going to hate him. So I've got him now. Verse 1 of chapter 28. In those days, the Philistines gathered their forces to fight against Israel, David's people. And Achish said to David, you must understand that you and your men will accompany me in the army. David, you're so good at what you do. You've got to come. You're on my side now. You told me what you're doing against your people. You've become so obnoxious that you are going to be part of my side. And then David said, then you will see for yourself what your servant can do. And Achish replied, very well. I will make you my bodyguard for life. And we'll pick up the story next week. Again, I've read this story multiple times. It wasn't until I began to really dissect to fully understand what in the world was David thinking. David, what? You go from the littlest sin, grieves you. To now you're on this slippery slope and you're doing things that are imaginable. And for David, all he could see was his current problem. It consumed him. He couldn't see past it. So David makes his own plans. He leaves the people of God, the promised land. He kills senselessly. Even though that wasn't what God wanted, he covered his own tracks. And this is not going to be the last time we see David lie to cover his own tracks. We're going to read another chapter in David's life that's just as tragic as this one. And he hitches his wagon to the enemy. And because David lied, the king's like, I've got him. David, you are a mighty warrior. I've got you now. And he spun himself a web of lies and deceit. And he thought he knew best to get out of a difficult circumstance. And David trusted himself, his self-talk, more than God and more than the promises of God. And we read this story and we're like, so Acts says he's a man after God's own heart. Huh. Hebrews 11 includes David as the list of the heroes of the faith. That's kind of interesting. We see that 73 of the Psalms are written by this guy. That a lot of the Proverbs that his son Solomon writes down actually come from his dad. So a lot of the Proverbs comes from David. And this guy is no hero. But even despite this horrible chapter, the chapter that God is not in, where David is unfaithful, but it still points us to who is a true hero. Again, the Bible is not a story of perfect people, but a story of messed up people with a perfect God who restores and redeems your and my messes. And so there's a few questions that we have to ask ourselves when it comes to this story. The first one is this. Are we committed to pursuing success or faithfulness? Are you and I committed to pursuing success or faithfulness? For David, he knows how to be successful. He's a warrior. He knows what war is. He knows how to fight, but he trades in his faithfulness to God in order to be successful in the eyes of the enemy. It's like this old Irish proverb that says, where your heart leads, your feet will follow. Where your heart leads, your feet will follow. Our heart is bent on becoming success. And he thinks to himself, I know how to get this done. I know what I need to do. And David turns away from God's calling to get out of that. He pursues the thing that gets him out of that situation. The question is, what are we pursuing? What have we staked our life upon? What has our priorities in our life? What has God become a focal point of every area or just a part of it? And a lot of times you and I, we can lean on our own understanding. If our heart is set on things of the flesh, on things that we want, we cannot be surprised of the chapters that you and I write in our life. We can't be surprised of the paths that we walk. But if our heart is set on God, we may get to those places in different ways than we expect, but we can trust the path. We can trust the purpose. We can trust God's timing and God's plan. I know for me, I can look back at my life, and I'm sure that many of you can too, that you have chapters in your life and you're like, how in the world did I write that chapter? Maybe for some of us, it may just be like a small chapter, just a blip of season in our lives. You know, where we make a choice or do things and we redirect. God redirects our course. Maybe for some of us, it was like maybe a year or a season of our life. Maybe our teenage years or young adult years. And we look back and like, whew, man, I hope nobody ever reads that chapter. Hope nobody knows about that chapter in my life. Or maybe for you and for me, we're like, I hope I never write that chapter again. That was a difficult time. Or maybe for some of us, this is Matthew Henry's commentary from Genesis to Revelation. It's a huge book. Maybe for some of us, it's a huge volume. For years, we've been walking our own path, doing our own thing. We think to ourselves, I know what's best day after day after day, month after month, year after year. And we look back and like, I wish I didn't have this chapter. But the question is do I pursue the faithfulness of God or do I pursue the chapters that I've had in my life? But the thing that I understand, the thing that I know, is that no matter how difficult the chapters are that we have written, no matter how messed up they are, God looks at them and says, I can use that. I can make something beautiful out of this chapter. The chapters that we wish nobody would know about are the ones God says, I can redeem that. I can restore. I can make something beautiful out of that. It's these I do moments that we come to. In every marriage ceremony, there's an I do moment. They exchange rings. I've done it for years. In fact, on August 4th, 2001, Lisa and I, we stood before each other. We said our I do's. We committed to each other, and I committed to Lisa and Lisa only. I didn't say, well, babe, you know, when it's convenient, I'll be faithful. When, you know, when we're both healthy, you know, we've gone through some things, but when we're both healthy, you know, I will be faithful. When there's no other options, you know, when we have wealth, I'm going to be faithful. I have a daughter that's 18 years old, and eventually she's going to get married. Hopefully it's a long time from now. All you guys understand that. But someday she's going to stand before a man. She's not going to stand before a boy because a boy's never going to get to that point. I'll make sure of that. She's going to stand before a man, and they're going to have the I do's. And if he's kind of ho-hum about the commitment, you know, I don't know. When it's convenient, you know, Hannah, when I feel like it, if there's really, you know, no one else around, then I'll be faithful. Let me tell you, he doesn't have to finish his vows because I'll be kicking his hiney out the door. Because when you say I do, you say I commit no matter what. But too many times, that's how we approach God. God, I will be faithful if you do this. Whatever that might be. God, as long as I have success, as long as I have health, as long as I am happy, God, I will pursue you if you do those things to me. It leads us to the second question. Is our definition of success, health, wealth, and happiness, or biblical obedience? There's a book that's for pastors, and I've actually referenced it several times the last couple months. It's called Liberating Ministry from the Success Syndrome. And simply the premise of this book is that God's definition of success is not what you accomplish, not how big of a ministry you have, but the obedience and faithfulness that you have to God. Now, don't get me wrong. It's not a bad thing to have dreams and goals. It's not bad to pursue things, to advance God's kingdom through a ministry. But the definition of success is our obedience and faithfulness to God. Not what the world says. And some of the pastors I look up to the most are men who didn't have the biggest churches, men who weren't the most gifted communicators, but the ones who faithfully served God in ministry for a long period of time. Long obedience in the same direction. Those are the men I look up to. I see them as successes. They may not have the biggest churches. They may not have all got the awards or the accolades or asked to speak at a seminar. But they're the ones I see as successful because they're obedient. And the definition of success is, have I been obedient and faithful to God? Even in the most difficult situations and chapters you and I go through, when all we can see is our current situation, what we have in our life, do we continue on the course? And what Jesus says in Matthew 25:23, well done, good and faithful servant, because you've kept the path. You've kept the faith. And it's not the applause of men, but it's the applause of God. And David found favor in the king's eyes. And we can find favor in the world's eyes, and we can get the applause. And that's going to be our reward. But as Paul said in Galatians 10, am I not trying to win the approval of human beings or of God? Or am I trying to please people? If I were still trying to please people, I would not be a servant of Christ. And so how do you and I measure obedience? Obedience is only measured by obedience. Not that my life is better for it. Sorry, let me start over. Not that life is going better for us. Too many times we measure obedience by the reward we get for our obedience to God. If I'm obedient, then I should get whatever that is. Since I'm obedient, God, I shouldn't have to go through this, my current reality. You see, the measure of obedience is our consistent obedience, even when things are not going my way. In our walk with Jesus Christ, sometimes we've bought into this world's economy of risk and reward. If I do this, then I should be rewarded for this. But God becomes a wishing genie. That, God, I've held my part. Where are you at? Why haven't you held your end of the bargain? But that isn't how God's economy works. God's economy is making me more like Him. Yeah, there's going to be good times that we walk through. And we have to ask, God, is it making me more like you? Then we go through difficult situations, and sometimes this is where I grow the most. I don't know about you, but when all I can see is my troubling situation, I continue to be faithful to it. I say, God, make me more like you. Through the good and the bad, the victories and the sorrows. Sometimes we have to go through these chapters to make an eternal difference in people's lives. Sometimes we have to write difficult things to fulfill the calling that God has for us. And so the question is what do you and I do with our unfaithful chapters? This wasn't the best chapter for David. And we're going to see several other chapters that weren't very good for David. This may be one of the worst. And we ask, what's God going to do with this chapter? We ask, what is God going to do with our unfaithful chapters? But the stories you and I write, our unfaithful chapters, tells us that we're not the hero, but that God is the hero. He's the hero of the story who offers grace and mercy, and there's forgiveness that covers our sin. I have chapters like this. Maybe not this big, but maybe some of you do. Where you're walking through life and you do your own thing for so long and you look back and you're like, oh my goodness, how did I write that chapter? And many times it starts with, I think I know best. I know what I need to do. We walk away and we escape. But in these chapters, despite these chapters, the hero of our story offers us grace and mercy and forgiveness of our sin. And that's why it's written in the Psalms, but you offer forgiveness that we might learn to fear you. And as David wrote, he looked back at all of his chapters, and he wrote this in Psalms 32, blessed is the one whose transgressions are forgiven, whose sins are covered. Blessed is the one whose sin the Lord does not count against them, whose spirit is no deceit. And so David writes a pretty bad chapter. And God grants forgiveness and mercy and grace. You and I have written bad chapters, unfaithful chapters. We look back and we're like, I hope no one ever discovers this chapter. But God looks at it and says, I can do something with that. I can make something beautiful out of that. And there's some times that we're so stuck, like it's a lead ball, in our life and we just can't get past it. But God grants us grace and mercy. And maybe that's you today. Maybe you're walking through this place today. You're broken, you're hurt. This chapter is long and you're still in it. Maybe it's by choices of your own or maybe choices of somebody else. But God has something beautiful for you in the midst of this chapter. He grants you grace and mercy. And he also grants forgiveness. And so God, this morning. God, I as weird as it sounds, God, I am thankful that this chapter was written in David's story because it shows to me your true character, that you want to restore and redeem people. And so, God, I thank you for it. It teaches me I'm not the hero, but there is a hero. And when I surrender and I say yes to you and I step into that relationship, God, you can rewrite my story. So maybe there's some here today. Maybe you're here today. And you know you're not walking where God has called you to. You've thought in your own heart, I know what's best. And God's calling you into relationship, into a new path today. I just encourage you right now to say yes to God. Say yes to Jesus. Jesus, I give you my life. I surrender my life to you. God, forgive me of my sin. God, I thank you for the grace and the mercy that you give to me even when I've been unfaithful to you. And so whether you've stepped into relationship with God before or maybe this is your first time, God's calling you. So God, I pray that today. God, that we become more like you. In the midst of the good times and the bad times, God, make me more like you. That this world can see what it means to be a follower of Jesus Christ.